welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the languid Luke Cutforth.
I don't know what that means.
Nor do I. This week we're talking about measuring minds and perspicacity points, but first, we have a wee review.
What was the IQ of the person who sent us the review? Because if it's low, I don't care.
It looks like it's five, because there are five stars.
Ah!
Which is a high IQ, I think. It's like golf. The lowest score wins. So this one is five stars, as I've said, and it goes on to say, a fascinating and engaging podcast. I've listened to every episode of SciGuys and find it a great way to start my week. I especially like the topics that deal with crazy experiments, mental illness, gender and sexuality. That's like all of them. recently, a doctor diagnosed me with ADHD, and it was your episodes on autism and ADHD that helped me realize this about myself. Thanks, SciGuys. I look forward to more crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. Wow, we are causing autism and ADHD in the community.
We're out here autisming the kids.
SciGuys gave me autism. But I've got a question for you, Luke, and for everyone who is watching or listening. Now, if you're watching, get down to the YouTube comments and answer that question. And if you're listening on Spotify, do the same thing, but in the Spotify comment answery place. And if you're literally anywhere else, here's what I want you to do. Join Mensa. It might be hard work, and honestly, you might not actually be able to do it. I don't know what their requirements are, but join Mensa, take it over, and if you can't join it, overthrow Mensa, and rename the name of Mensa to your answer to this question. The question, Luke, is what is your IQ?
Well, according to the IQ test you just sent me and made me do, 125, which is quite good.
That is very good, Luke. That's really, really good.
Yeah.
Shall we start
the
episode?
Go on, Corey, what's your IQ?
Luke, I wouldn't.
What's your IQ,
no,
Corey? What did the test say your IQ was?
Well, given that we both did the test under the same conditions, zero practice, together in the same time frame, mine is 133, and it's 8 points more than yours, and that's okay.
Oh, well, I look forward to hearing about that 500 times in the next hour.
Oh, Luke, don't be silly. You can't count to 500 with a silly low IQ like yours. No, okay, I am fully joking. I'm fully joking. Luke, would you like to let me and perhaps those listening, watching, know what IQ is?
What stands for intelligence quotient. Mm-hmm. It is an attempt at a standardized test for a type of intelligence. Mm-hmm. There's debate over whether it's actually how predictive it is, how accurate it is, that kind of thing, whether it's too limited, whether it leaves out other types of intelligence, etc. But it is an attempt at a standardized test of intelligence.
Now, my unbiased opinion, you know, which has not changed since taking this test, is that IQ is the best.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really good, personally. And I think taking an online test is the best way of doing it. Yeah, I think that's just my thoughts, you know, as a high IQ individual. Can't even do this.
Any biases involved here?
No, you're spot on, Luke. Yeah, I would agree with you 100% there. I don't really know what I can add to that, except all of the things I've got written on my notes, so I'll add those. Yeah, so IQ test, you're right. It's a measure of intelligence. And I'm glad you said a specific kind of intelligence. We'll get more into that towards the end of the episode. So 130 and above is high IQ. 90 to 110 would be sort of average, because 100 is bang on the average. So 10 either way, right? That's roughly average. 80 to 90 would be below average, obviously. And then 70 to 80 would be borderline. Anything below 70 is maybe sort of indication of a sort of mental disability, or it says intellectual deficiency. And I really don't like the terms used in a lot of this. They all feel quite icky. I mean, we can get into, you know, why, you know, we don't use IQ maybe as broadly as one might expect. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, I just kind of want to talk about, you know, what intelligence is and sort of how IQ tests work more generally.
Mm-hmm.
So, Luke, what is intelligence?
I once heard intelligence described as the ability to make models, which I really liked as an idea. It's like the ability, because you're born with, or you sort of are given or taught certain models of understanding, but then intelligence is like the ability to construct new ones. I'm sure it's way broader than that. But I liked that as a starting
Yeah, mental
point.
Models. I was going to say, to clarify, mental models of understanding.
Oh, I thought it was just Lego.
Yeah.
I'm real good at Lego.
I'm like, model trains. Maybe that's, you know, like, maybe that's what it is. If you're really good at making model trains, you're...
All the Warhammer kids are out here like, yeah. Oh, wait, they don't make models. They paint models. Sorry.
That's a very different thing.
You're not allowed in the club.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're saying intelligence would be able to... is sort of the ability to make mental models.
Mm-hmm.
So, sort of adaptability... problem solving, mm-hmm. I guess, is kind of what you're hitting at. But yeah, it's intelligence is really broad. It's a difficult thing to pin down, right? And I think the difficulty as well lies in the fact that there's not really any way to remove our cultural bias
mm-hmm.
when we're talking about intelligence. So we're gonna look at things that we value more culturally and hold those on a pedestal and probably diminish things that we, you know, don't really value as much in our culture. But broadly, let's describe intelligence as the ability to learn from experiences and to adapt to new experiences, mm-hmm. right? That's pretty straightforward, right? So learning is the key part of intelligence and then adapting to new things. So, you know, it's almost kind of like what you would have in exams. Do you remember how you had sort of knowledge and understanding questions and mm-hmm. then problem-solving questions?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, in England, did they literally split them up like that? Because... in the mark schemes in Scottish exams, at the very least, there were knowledge and understanding questions and then sort of like problem solving questions.
I blocked most of school out, so I can't, I honestly can't remember, but I don't think so. That doesn't ring any bells.
That's really interesting, man, actually. Yeah, no. So I think that's what happened in Scotland. We split them up into those two broad categories. There might have been a third one, but I don't remember, if I'm honest with you. Clearly, I don't remember school very well. But intelligence isn't just knowing stuff, right? Like, you can know a lot of stuff and still not be able to... I mean, come on. We know people who have a lot of information in their heads, but just cannot solve a problem. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like you face them with a simple task and they're like, I don't know how to deal with this, you know? It's like crows have that intelligence where they can, like, problem solve. They can create a tool to create another tool to solve a problem, right? Some people may know a lot of facts, but they don't have damn skills that crows got.
But I think so. A lot of our education system is not set up in order to distinguish between those. I know you're saying that there were separate things like that, and there were separate questions in measuring those two separate things, but a lot of school is a memory test.
Yeah, but mate, ultimately, both of those things broadly drew on memory, right? Like, if I'm honest, with school, even with like the problem-solving stuff, I'm like, yeah, well, you just remember the way that they want you to figure out the answer. It's ultimately it all comes down to memory.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, you're never facing me with a problem where I really need to think too mm-hmm. hard about how to solve it. It's like you have a list of maybe like 10 ways of doing problems. I just need to pick from the list of 10. You don't expect me to remember the way to solve all these problems? Of course I do. There's 10. It's fine. Whatever. Right. Like, and that's why I think school is probably it's a different experience if you're good at retaining information, right? Like, and I want to be clear, like, there are sort of different ways of being intelligent. Like, you could be not very good at retaining information, but like wicked smart, like really, really good at problem solving and picking things up and finding new ways to do things, right? Like, those are different skill sets to have. But one of them is, as you sort of say, selected for more in school, and the other one, you know, problem solving in school is almost dissuaded.
Yeah, because it makes you... like, then you question the teacher.
This is a story I might have told a couple of times on this podcast, but man, like, I did not really care about some exams in school before they became actual exams. So we did exams at the end of the year that would kind of determine the class that you were in for the following year. And I remember one year in my maths class, it was the only year in my entire life I was not in the top set for maths, right? The top class. And all of my friends, pretty much, I think bar one, were in that top maths class. I was like, that's rubbish. Like, why am I in the second set? It's literally, it was a difference of sort of percentages, like just barely, you know, like I could have been in that top set, but there were too many people in that top set. So I got shunted down based on like 1 or 2 points. I was like, screw this. This is boring. This is annoying me, because the teacher for the second top set was really, really into like, you have to do your note. You have to do sort of your working because if you get it wrong, I need to know how you got it wrong. And I'm like, I sound so full of myself, but. I'm not gonna lie, I did find school relatively easy, because for someone with ADHD who is interested in like science and finds like learning and retaining information like that not terribly difficult, school is like really made for you to succeed. Like it's really, really made for you to find it easy to succeed. So I would be like, yeah, I'm not going to make that many mistakes if we've got to go at the pace of a whole class. Do you know what I mean? Like I'll just speed through it myself, not do the working, get the answer, get it done right, and just to spite you. And I did that for a few weeks. Like,
you're such a dick.
I refused to do it the way that he was saying. I was like, I'm going to do it quicker and I'm going to get it right because I don't want to be in this class. And then after a couple of weeks, me and this other girl got pulled out and they were like, do you want to move to the top set? And I was like, yeah. I went and sat next to one of my mates and nice. Just had fun in the top set, honestly. Like, and it, from that point on, I started doing the working and stuff because I was like, I don't want to make any mistakes. like you wind me up and I'm like, I went rogue. But yeah, no, it's like, I'm kind of bringing this up because the concept of intelligence is a really difficult one to pin down, right? So we're kind of talking about it being learning, but then also adapting to new things. And so if you do an IQ test, I mean, there's loads of different IQ tests, right? Online. Most of them are rubbish. Most of them nonsense, right? Be honest, if you're doing an IQ test that isn't in a sort of, I guess,
like
not
an
clinical.
Example.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, not if you're doing it in a non-controlled environment or an uncontrolled environment, I don't know how reliable those results are. They're probably liable to be quite changeable. But, you know, there are lots of different sort of IQ tests, but I think broadly, they kind of build on the same sort of problem-solving, spatial awareness-y kind of thing.
Yeah, so you do like transformations of objects. So you do like how much can you hold an object in your mind and rotate it, and then you do like pattern recognition, like seeing how something changes over time. Mm. But then in the main IQ tests, which we didn't do on this one, there's also like a lot of language based stuff. So it's like this word is to this word as this other word is to this other word. And that's sort of pattern, but it's language based pattern, which even language manipulation, I don't think would necessarily automatically be considered as like intelligent in the same way that like raw, like mathematical or scientific understanding. And that's, I'm sure we're going to get onto this, but like social intelligence, emotional intelligence, so many of these things are discounted. Where they take a lot of quote unquote intelligence to do,
yeah.
But it's not rotating a shape in five dimensions, so get out of the room.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you can almost look at it as that sort of division between hard science and soft science. The ones that men do, the ones that girls do.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say because also our classical concept of an intelligent person actually often is specifically non-socially intelligent.
Yeah.
Like, we have the idea of, like,
you
know, nerdy boy at Oxford University, doesn't know how to talk to anyone and doesn't know how to speak because he's too anxious, but he's amazing at math. It's it's that smart guy.
You know,
there
it's
he
your
is.
Character archetype of, like, you know, your Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards kind of guy, where, like, he's the smartest man in the world, but he can't, he's rude to people because he's so smart, he doesn't... That he's got no social intelligence. He has no he's a fictional character, obviously, but no emotional intelligence. But that's like an archetype that we see throughout media, right? And you could maybe look at it as being kind of like, ooh, the sort of autistic person who is really, really smart, but like, I understand why, you know, as in characters, kind of having someone who is really smart in one way, but also has maybe deficits in another way is interesting to build, you know, to build a character around. But, you know, it does draw from life to some extent. You know, there are plenty, I mean, I did science at uni, man. There are plenty of people who are bright, but just like don't have social skills, really.
Either that or they're just super condescending because they think they're really smart.
Which is, I think, not having social skills, to be honest with you.
True, yes.
No, I mean, like, honestly, if you're condescending and rude to people because you think you're better than everyone else around you, those are poor social skills.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's, you don't have the respect for other people to be able to engage with them properly. That's still
or
a deficit.
Or indeed
in
see the value in other people liking you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and that's a real deficit of intelligence. Like, people liking you is quite valuable, probably more than being smart, especially in our world.
No, genuinely. I mean, look at Elon Musk, right? Like, I mean, well, no one really
on,
likes him.
He's the richest man in the world.
And no one
and no
likes
one him,
likes and he's
that's
not
the
that
opposite
smart.
Of your point.
Oh, wow. It seems that things aren't fair. But no, so yeah, intelligence. How do you think it can vary, you know, let's say across populations or within the same person over time.
Within the same person over time, I imagine it goes up for the first bit because I know that IQ tests are sort of adjusted according to age. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they go up for a bit. But then across a lot of demographics, I would hope that they are broadly like there's no not much variation. What are you looking at that for?
Across demographics, there's not any. Are you controlling for anything when you're looking across?
Well, obviously socioeconomic.
Right.
Like socioeconomic demographics, obviously there's going to. But what I mean by that is like I know that the average intelligence for a man and the average intelligence for a woman is the same.
Mm.
And I think and hope that the average intelligence for people of different skin colors is the same. And that's
when you control for socioeconomic status.
When you control for socioeconomic status, yes. Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, your intelligence varies across your life. It will tend to go up and then it decrease as you kind of age. But yeah, and everything you're saying there is pretty spot on. I really have little to add. If we look at sort of the genetic element, so genes compared to environment, the heritability coefficient is between 0.4 and 0.8. But basically, like the heritability of intelligence, while it is somewhat heritable, it can also be affected by socioeconomic status, other factors, right? Nutrition as a child as well can sort of moderate that. Lead poisoning?
I'll do it.
You don't want, as a baby, don't want that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the history of IQ, though, Luke?
It feels like a British thing. I don't know what, maybe that's just me as a British person, but it feels like the kind of thing we would, it's kind of eugenics-y, kind of eugenics-y vibes.
We do love eugenics in the good old UK. That's why it's called the UK. The U stands for eugenics. Anyway, it's French. No, it was developed in 1905 by some French folk. French psychologist. So it was the Binet-Simon test, but it wasn't actually invented to measure IQ initially. It was sort of testing and finding kids that needed sort of extra help outside of school. So I guess learning disabled, learning difficulty kids, sort of highlighting them. And then it wasn't until 1912 that it was named by William Stern, a psychologist. And it kind of, that Binet-Simon test that I mentioned, that kind of was shifted a little bit over time to become a test for IQ, if that makes sense. And the initial sort of idea is that, the idea is that a sort of person's average IQ score is their sort of mental age with their sort of like actual chronological age. So the way that you would do it would be taking a ratio of your mental age to your chronological age. So your mental age being like the score that you taken from the score that you get. And your chronological age is how old you are. You take the ratio of those and then multiply them by 100. So you can understand why you're in average, like 100 would be average, right?
Yeah.
Because if your age is
1 to 1 times 100.
Yeah, if your age is 25, well, not 1 to 1, because a 1-year-old is probably not going to be doing a like a test like that, but sure, yeah.
Why not? Get them young. Sit them in the exam hall.
See, this is where those 8 extra points are going, my man. Like,
wow. Hang on, let's just have a can we get a counter on screen for a number of times Corey's rubbed in his 88 extra IQ points to me. You know what we were talking earlier about social intelligence?
Look, if you had 8 extra IQ points, you'd understand this.
Wow. Brilliant.
I think of you as being smarter than me. I'm not joking. Like, it's really...
Thanks so much.
Like, as far as this, like, really nebulous and sometimes not useful concept of intelligence goes, I want to be clear. I don't think I'm smarter than you. I think it's very funny.
That's very sweet.
To hold those 8 points because it's so nonsense. It doesn't...
Dangling them over me. Please, sir, can I have some points?
To me, it would only be funny... Like, it wouldn't be funny if I didn't think it was meaningless. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
The joke here is it's nonsense for me.
Thanks so much.
But no, you can understand if you've got someone who's 25 years old and, you know, they have a mental age of 25, even though the concept of mental age is like a bit of an iffy one in some cases. But a 25-year-old with a mental age of 25, you know, the ratio of that is 1 to 1 times 100. 100. Woo. So that's kind of how that would work there. I don't think that's really how it kind of works now. I mean, probably a similar principle, right? But you know, I don't think if you're 80 you have the mental age of a 90-year-old. You're so smart. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Because, yeah, that kind of breaks down at the top end.
Yeah, it does start to break down when you get to sort of being adults, I guess. But the way it works now is by kind of taking the raw score and then making, through using maths, making 100 the average. And I understand how this works. I don't want to just use the words like normal distribution, standard deviation, blah, 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 right? Because it's not going to be super comprehensible unless you understand this stuff. Basically, what they do is they use some maths so that 100 is the average score for people, right? And then you've got sort of most people being within a certain range. Mm-hmm. So there is, I think, a maximum IQ score. I don't really know what it is, but because IQ it's not just a raw number, right? It's not like, 100 is the raw number and it is intelligence of the average. It just happens to be the average intelligence, right? It's kind of based on everyone else. It's almost kind of like on a curve, if that makes mm-hmm, sense. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So intelligence, your score has, your IQ score has an effect on sort of some outcomes, right? So higher IQs can give, I think, better, yeah, so success in life, better sort of success in life, you know, better academic achievement, economic success, better health, longer lifespan. Wow. Now that doesn't mean that the IQ gives you those things that, you know, oh, smart people live longer. It just probably means that the people who have higher IQs or the ability to have higher IQs, there are other factors, you know, influencing.
Yeah. It's like when you look at how long someone will live, it's correlated with whether they play tennis or not. Mm. And it's because rich people play tennis.
Well, my favorite one actually is, I think it works for both of these, the sort of dark chocolate and red wine one. It might not be the case for the dark chocolate, but the red wine one, I think, you know, oh, a glass of wine a day. The people who are able to afford to do that and also able to afford, you know, like just to have a glass of wine on
or
average
just
every
like
now and then.
Exist in social circles where that's a normal thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They tend to be higher class or, you know, have of higher socioeconomic status. And that's the factor that's influencing it, right? Like that's what's causing them to live longer and blah blah blah. Mm. It's just that it's also making it more likely for them to engage in, you know, said behavior. So it's, you got to be careful when it comes to IQ, very, very importantly, to sort of normalize it or sort of take into account socioeconomic status and stuff like that. Because otherwise you might start thinking, oh, people with high IQ are just better. And that's eugenics.
Yep.
And stupid and wrong. And eugenics and bad and stupid and wrong.
Yeah. I read once, again, going off memory, not fact checked. I read once that like within like 10 or 20%, you can predict like a kid's grades like years before they take those exams just by giving them an IQ test, which is kind of insane.
Really?
Yeah.
I've not seen that. I mean, I guess the principle behind it would probably be, other than, well, we can get into it later, mm-hmm. right? But basically, I would say IQ can measure other things sort of tangentially, if that makes sense.
Sure. So it might be measuring privilege, how much your parents will like help you train for an exam.
How much your parents are willing to spend on a tutor from nothing to...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly,
okay,
right?
Fair.
And before we get into that, I kind of want to talk sort of... We've kind of... Oh, fuck. Yeah. And before we carry on with the rest of it, we should probably finish off on the history of IQ. Mm. So as I was saying, first developed the sort of precursor to the IQ test, or the kind of first-ish IQ test in 1905, first named formally in 1912. As we kind of saying, it used to be a sort of mental age versus chronological age kind of ratio. Now it's slightly different. But historically, it's been used for racism.
Hmm. That's a surprise.
Well, yeah. We love racism as a species. And I guess as a white race, mm-hmm. you and I, both members of said white race, we do generally enjoy that sort of thing. No, not personally. I'm not saying personally. I am not saying that you and I personally enjoy it. I'm just saying that, you know, our race, white people, that is my race, shut up. White people enjoy racism. Other races enjoy racism too. We all partake, but white people...
We'll have a tipple.
White people did a really good racism. We were the best, not the best. We were very prolific is my point, okay? Yeah. We did a lot of it. That's all.
If racism was an IQ test, we'd be in Mensa.
Jeez.
Is what you're saying. That's what you're saying. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying I condone it.
Sorry, that's out of context. That's an absolutely horrible quote. No context. If racism was an IQ test, we'd be in Mensa. Like, absolutely horrible.
And I got
the royal we, the white folk. Not me.
Oh,
are
you saying that white folk are all royals? Is that?
Oh, wow. Stop it. You're making it worse.
You've made it bad enough.
Oh.
But yeah, so IQ tests have historically been used for racism. Basically, you discriminate against different sort of groups by giving them this IQ test. And, you know, as we know, sort of socioeconomic status can affect it. And that's for a number of reasons, right? Like nutrition and whatnot, mm-hmm. Access to education, all of these things. Although the idea is that access to education should sort of limit, like shouldn't be a huge factor when it comes to IQ tests.
But it is.
Well, to some extent, yeah, it is. Yeah. You know, the way that it works is that like kind of practicing for an IQ test, you can increase your points by, I think, 10 to 15 just through sort of practice or through being motivated. But also, they are relatively consistent over time. Like, I don't think you can consistently practice and just get higher and higher and higher and higher. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll hit a top of what you're probably able to do. But then it's the same, you know, for athletic ability as well, right? You know, you're probably going to hit a max point where you're not going to be able to increase much more, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's why, like, you know, Michael Phelps, for example, right? He's got his big, long arms that make him good at swimming and his webbed whatever. He's a fish man made for swim,
sure.
Right?
Yep.
Now, if he were doing another sport, he might not be as good at that as he is at swimming because he is more attuned to swimming, right? And if we try and think of ability with IQ tests, is somewhat akin to that. You might top out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm probably, no matter how much time I spent in my entire life, I probably wouldn't be as good at swimming as Michael Phelps. No matter how much anyone trains for their life, they might not be as good at gymnastics, or I hope it's gymnastics, as Simone Biles, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are some people who have a natural innate advantage due to some genetic quirks and whatnot. And ability to do an IQ test might be the same. I mean, you could have your sort of cognitive abilities impacted by any number of things, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, and again, IQ tests aren't, we'll get more into it in a bit. This is really difficult, man. Like, I don't want to give away the entire game, but it feels really weird to talk about IQ for so long and not say it's not the best.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
In all of the ways that it's not the best. So I'll save it for later. But back to the racism, right? So do you know the bell curve? The 1994 book.
Is this about IQ?
Yeah.
So bell curve is like a shape that looks like a bell. It's like most of the shape is in the middle, and then it gets smaller down towards the edges and sort of peters out slowly at the edges.
Yeah.
And it means that the majority of people are bang in the middle, and then there's a few people at each of the edges at the high and the low.
At each extreme, yeah. So the idea behind that, or an idea that was suggested in that, was that, you know, the lower average IQ scores of, say, African Americans and Hispanics were due to them being fundamentally, genetically different and inferior.
Sure, that was the argument that was made.
Yeah. In that book, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, you know, inferior to, you know, white people, because white people had higher IQ scores on average, right? Mm. Now, as we've said so many times, socioeconomic status. We did an entire episode on race not existing. In fact, if you look up, enough stuff about IQ, and you see anywhere talking about the differences between races, you kind of get to the point where they're saying, like, hey, yeah, remember, race is a social construct, so it doesn't really, you can't really look at genetics and race at the same time and be, I guess, scientifically rigorous and consistent, because one is an, like, basically purely social concept, and the other is scientific, right? Like, race is not a biological concept, so trying to use IQ, average IQ scores between races as an indication of their genetic
obviously not.
No, it doesn't.
You have to test them at being a baby. Again, like I say, babies in the exam hall, get them in. Then there's the minimal socioeconomic status impact.
Yeah.
We've got to start testing babies, man.
Yeah. And and the thing is, and I've said it, but I'll say it again, once you control for those factors, all of those sort of differences between races tend to average out.
Yeah.
Right.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this Sci Guys merch.
Yes, Please do not tell anybody and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh, wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. And we also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely, under no circumstances should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some Sci Guys merch. Some Sci Guys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one.
That is kind of like the history of IQ, kind of background on IQ. Shall we talk about IQ tests themselves?
Yes, please.
Now, Luke, you and I just took an IQ test.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think an IQ test tests? Other than, like, obviously IQ, but what are we actually testing with an IQ test?
From the one we did, sort of ability to manipulate information?
Yeah.
And to hold information in your head and sort of process and transform it and then create an output. The test we were doing was basically identifying patterns, right?
Yeah, it was pattern recognition.
And it was only of shapes.
It was like, it was kind of spatial sort of manipulation, right? Manipulating shapes. There were different sort of functions being carried out on them, right? So you would kind of say, okay, this triangle is rotating clockwise and every third step it becomes black, right? And mm-hmm. you have to figure out which one is missing. There are obviously better IQ tests, different way of doing this, as you mentioned, sort of language parts of it. But yeah, I mean, broadly, IQ tests sort of look at spatial ability, mathematical ability, language ability, and memory as well. So spatial would be sort of visualizing and manipulating shapes in space. So as I was saying, that sort of rotation thing, or sort of symmetry as well, you know, like sort of mirror images of stuff, things like that. Mathematical ability is solving problems using logic, right? Because we think of maths as being numbers.
Yeah.
Maths isn't numbers. Maths is more logic, right? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Numbers.
Well, the numbers are the symbols.
Yeah, numbers are the symbols.
And we're just doing logical transformations on
literally,
them.
Yeah. And I think that's a difficult thing to wrap your head around, right? Like some mathematicians are probably really bad at like arithmetic, like mm-hmm. mental arithmetic, mm-hmm. like what we would think of as maths. And that's why when you get to a certain point, some maths is just like logic and shapes and stuff, like topology, right? That's maths, right?
Yeah, I think kind of the problem is that we have a concept of what maths is from school, but maths is actually an awful lot broader than we would expect it to be.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, logic would be what we're talking about when we say mathematical ability here. Language ability, you kind of touched on that already. So this is like that, kind of the kind of thing I guess you'd see in the SAT.
Dog is to woof as cat is to meow.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, it's filling in a word in a sentence, things like that. And I find that, you know, I feel like the language thing is probably, it's weird because I feel like, you know, different people are not going to be as good at it based on their ability with said language, but they could know three other languages and be doing this in their fourth language, which isn't their strongest.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is, yes, if it's your native language and all of that, right, maybe it's better. But again, like, I don't know if language ability and sort of raw language ability and the sort of ability that one has with language are necessarily a one-to-one, because mm-hmm. language is very much something that you, I guess, kind of get better at when through practice and through education, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, again, just kind of spitting that out there, right? Like, and memory ability, which is recalling things, you know what memory is. You get presented with something and then you hold on to that thing until later, right? Like, and again, memory being a part of intelligence is weird, right? Because, you know, people with ADHD can be intelligent. Very intelligent. You know, some of the most intelligent people I know have ADHD. To be fair, most of the people I know have ADHD. So,
selection bias.
I think that's unimportant. But having ADHD doesn't preclude you from being intelligent, but it can also wreck your memory, right? Okay, for example, right? Let's say this Mensa IQ test we took is somewhat reasonable and not absolute nonsense, right? And I've taken like a few IQ tests throughout my life and they've all been relatively around that area, right? Let's say I've got 133 IQ. Fine, whatever. I cannot remember where I put things ever. My memory sucks for a lot of things. It truly, Luke, it is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I have lost things that I have just put... I've lost things that are in front of me. You've seen this happen before. Oh, yeah. Like, you've seen me lose... Like, not know where things are that I've... Okay, earlier today. Not even 3 hours ago. You, me, and the fifth Psy guy were sitting in a room together. And I turn to the fifth Psy guy and I say, oh, are you all right? Because he just made a noise, signaling that he might not be all right. And as he's answering, I turn to you and start talking to you about something entirely unrelated. For the sole reason that I'd forgot, and I'm not even... Forgot that I'd asked, are you all right? Immediately upon asking it.
Whoa. Right. You okay, buddy? Interestingly, when you're saying about ADHD and intelligence, though, I did watch a video by somebody I think is credible. It wasn't just some random YouTuber, which was talking about how there's this idea around ADHD. It's like, oh, they're the gifted kids. But actually, the data suggests that ADHD, the IQ has actually shifted slightly to the left. So it's slightly lower average IQ with ADHD. The bell curve is the same shape, but everything's just shifted a few points to the left, which is really interesting.
So to the left would be lower then?
Slightly lower, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, so on average... Oh, weird. That's very... Is it maybe a flatter curve, or is it the same...
No, I think it's pretty much exactly the same shape, just a slight shift. And interestingly as well, I don't know if you want to put this in, because I might actually be wrong, from the TikTok algorithm randomly recommending me Jordan Peterson videos sometimes, there's that... I think there he, I think, talked about, and whether this is correct or not, I don't know.
Can I just say, Jordan Peterson said it, I'd guess that it's probably misinterpreted or wrong, but carry on.
Well, but if it's true, it's very interesting.
Sure, yeah.
Which is the idea, I think he was being asked, or he was being accused of thinking that men and women were not as intelligent as each other. And he sort of responds by saying, well, actually, no, the data suggests that men and women have the same average intelligence. There's a tiny bit of difference at the margins, I think is the word he used. And what he's suggesting is the bell curve is slightly wider for men. So you might get the most intelligent people are men at the edge, but the average across everyone is the same. Now, I don't know if that's
true. I remember hearing Jordan Peterson say this.
Yeah.
I have no idea if it's true, but it does immediately smack to me as sort of that bioessentialism of trying to be... No. I'm not saying that men are smarter.
Yeah,
I'm just saying we're smarter, but we're equal. Do you know what I mean?
And it also may well be like men have access, on average, more access to resources. And so some of them will end up slightly higher on that test. Of course they will.
Yeah.
And it doesn't at all mean that any random man or woman you pick, the woman is likely to be less intelligent. Absolutely not. Include that.
For one thing, the woman is probably more likely to be emotionally intelligent.
For sure.
Like, realistically, man. Like, no, I mean, I don't know about that Jordan Peterson thing. I mean, I don't really want to make any comment on it because it could be correct, but I don't know. Ultimately, as well, though, I kind of want to move away from IQ as being a score that we kind of judge people by.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can be useful, sure, if you want to understand someone's spatial, mathematical, language, all of those sorts of abilities, right? It can be useful in that sense. That doesn't tell you how good someone is at things, right? Like, you can have a high IQ and be rubbish at many, many tasks.
Yeah, you might not be as hardworking.
Yeah.
You might not be as a good team player. There's loads of things that actually mean that you it also doesn't necessarily predict for your success, because you might need to work hard.
Yeah.
Might not need to do like 2 minutes work and then refuse to do any more, even if that 2 minutes work was real good.
No, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so they're designed to measure sort of your general ability with problem solving and all of these sorts of things and your ability to understand new sort of concepts. And they can have different categories that test for different abilities. But like, generally, if you're good at one category, you'll sort of do well in others when it comes to IQ tests. Obviously, there are sort of variations. We're all people, you know, it can be very different. But generally, if you're really good at one, you'll probably be quite good at the others as well. But, you know, there are different things that can affect IQ score beyond just those things that are being measured, right? So, as we've said, socioeconomic status as well, but also, you know, practice. I've briefly touched on that, right? You can gain, I think, 10 to 15 IQ points based on, like, doing the test enough. And I was saying this to you when we finished it, right? Like, the time wasted with the first few questions, just figuring out, like, when I say just figuring out,
what's,
I mean, like,
going on here?
Well, you look at it and you're like, okay, they're doing this thing. Yep. So addition, subtraction. And it's, for some of the questions, they use the same basic sort of processes, right? And so once you've got you know, a few, like five of the processes that they do down. It's just picking from the list of five, or is it a different one? Okay, it's a different one, figuring it out. Mm-hmm. But if you already had the list of five, if you already went in knowing, like, okay, they'll be doing this kind of stuff, you'd fly through the first few questions and can spend more time figuring out the sort of, let's say, more difficult ones.
And we should also add quickly that, especially at least for the Mensa IQ test that we did, it's timed. You have a maximum amount of time. So it's not like if you spend a while figuring out how the hell to do this question, you're fine because you have unlimited time to finish the paper.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about how many of the problems you solve in the amount of time you have. So if you haven't studied all the different forms that the questions might have, which you very much can do,
yeah,
you will genuinely get a lower score. So practicing allows you to fly through the paper quicker because you know what types of questions you're going to be asked.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a similar idea as doing mock exams, right? Like you get to understand generally how that is how I've done every exam in my life, my man. Like I honestly brute force it.
That's just how I did my what's the test you have to do when you pass your driving? You also do a theory test.
Yeah.
I didn't open a book about theory. I just did the test loads of times until I never got one wrong. And then I got 100% and I never looked at the book.
Well, yeah, of course. They've got a limited pool of questions. If you do, I think I figured it out at one point. You can do a certain number of tests and have gone through every single question.
Yeah.
And man, I was getting good scores before I'd even tried to study for it just by like doing it enough time, trial and error.
Yeah.
And I find like, you know, it felt like a similar thing in school with like sort of biology and stuff, right? Like they just wanted you to say the same things. That's all they wanted. And so it feels weird talking about this, right? Because obviously not everyone finds school like quite easy. But again, the reason that I found school easy, I don't think because, oh, I'm fundamentally smarter than anyone else. I just found it easy to retain some certain information, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and yeah, I say I've got a terrible memory for some things. I can forget things immediately. Absolutely. Right. But I can retain, like, you know, this, I know what episode of The Simpsons it is, like every, like within the first 10 seasons, like within the first few minutes, like.
Which is the one where Sideshow Bob steps on all the rakes?
Cape Fear.
Oh God, you know the name.
Well,
what season's that in?
I think it's like six-ish.
Okay.
Five maybe. I think it's five.
Which is the episode where Homer goes into the three-dimensional world and then falls out of it into
the real
world.
It's a treehouse of horror, but the segment is called Homer with like a three, like Homer cube. Like, so it's based on I think it's the same one with Hugo, the Bart's evil twin, and maybe the evil, what they call it, the evil like sort of signs mascot things.
What episode is the one where they get a swimming pool in their back garden?
Oh, that's brilliant. So that's I think almost definitely season six. That is Bart of Darkness.
This is freaky. This is so freaky.
Do you know what? And you're putting me on the spot here, man, because like,
yeah, we didn't agree to do this.
No, we didn't. No, you're putting
I'm
me on the spot.
I'm just randomly
here.
Flashing back to Simpsons episodes and going, which one's this?
I can just remember, right? Like, because I watch The Simpsons a lot. And I can remember like stuff for like weird little science facts and stuff as well. Or I can remember things in biology or in, you know, in school. I can remember math stuff or physics stuff. Like, and it was, if you could just remember enough stuff, that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't necessarily need to be good at the thing itself. You just needed to know how to do the test well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we're talking about there when it comes to the driving theory test, right? Probably as well as some IQ tests. If you know how to take an IQ test, like what they're looking for, you could probably get yourself a bit of a better score just by knowing that. And they found that actually kids can develop a higher ability if they have better nurturing and a better diet as babies and more intellectual stimulation before school. And that will like boost their IQ for a few years, but it doesn't result in a permanent boost, apparently. But then you can get different scores by taking the same test, you know, over and over again. So if you take it multiple times, you can get different scores. So it's not like you take an IQ test once, you get that number and you're like, yep, this is 100% my IQ. There is no way that it could be a few points different. Blah, blah. Like your IQ score shouldn't be an identity. By any means, right? I think it was Stephen Hawking that said, maybe it wasn't, maybe this is just one of those things that people say, oh, this person said that, but I think it was Stephen Hawking that was like, you know, people who have to boast about their IQ scores are not you know, sort of smart people, or not cool people you
not
want to be around.
Not very interesting.
Yeah, not very interesting people, right?
And he's probably got, like, the highest IQ of most of the people alive at his time.
Oh, he was a very smart man. Absolutely, yeah. And so I guess the question, right, is does IQ work? And that's a difficult question, because what is IQ being used for? That's necessarily important in the question. So, I mean, what do you think? Does IQ work?
Well, it really depends what you're measuring for. Does IQ work as a test to test for the quality of your genetic code? No, I don't think it does.
What? Are you saying that my genetic code is not 8 points better than yours?
Within certain boundaries, it does. Like, broadly, it might do. But in that, like, you'll have some part of your eventual IQ score will have a genetic component. But so much of it is also about how you're raised, how many vitamins you got as a child, all that kind of stuff. So does it predict for, like, how good your genetics are in a eugenicsy sense? No, it doesn't. Does it maybe predict for how good you are at certain types of tasks in the present moment as you are now with all the vitamins and your socioeconomic status and everything? Yeah, it does to a certain extent. But it leaves out so many things and so many other things that are valuable in almost any setting, including in a work setting where you might be interested in measuring these kind of things, that broadly, I don't think it is. It's not a sort of silver bullet for measuring someone's sort of intellectual ability.
Yeah, no, fair, absolutely. And I think if we talk about intelligence, as kind of said earlier, IQ measures a very sort of narrow band, and it can be influenced by many factors, like motivation. So there was a study, I think it was in 2011. Yeah, a study in 2011. And they looked at sort of a bunch of kids, I believe. Yeah, a bunch of kids doing IQ tests. And they found that, they found that motivation was a factor. So obviously, you know, let's say intelligence is the thing that we're trying to measure, right? That sort of nebulous concept, that is the, like, the limiting factor, right? Like, you can't motivate your way to a higher IQ score than you're sort of able to get, in the same sense that I can't motivate my way into beating Usain Bolt in a race, right now.
Sure.
Right? Like, I can increase or decrease the time it takes me to finish that race based on my motivation. If I'm unmotivated, I'll probably finish it slower. If I'm quite motivated, I'll finish it faster. But I'm not going to be able to make myself fast enough to beat Usain Bolt purely through motivation, right? So motivation can modulate or sort of moderate your score in the moment. If you're more motivated, you'll probably do better on the test, which obviously makes sense. And there's another study in 2012. IQ was kind of debunked in 2012 in that if you look up sort of IQ work, IQ debunked, how does IQ, all of these sorts of questions on IQ, you know, you could go positive, you could go negative. And by positive and negative, I mean IQ doesn't work, or IQ does work. Sort of, you know, the affirmative and the opposite of affirmative. Can't remember what the word is. God, I'm losing points left, right, and center, mate. Soon I'll be at your lowly 125.
Affirmative is to good as what is to bad.
That's exactly it.
That's what you're trying to do.
I'm trying to do it. I can't remember it. My vocabulary, my memory is clearly not
critical?
Good enough.
Critical? Kind of critical?
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Like that.
Yeah, but My point is, no matter sort of how you search for it, you find that in 2012, there was a lot of talk about IQ being sort of debunked, let's say. And I've got a quote here for you from a sort of article from 2012. After conducting the largest online intelligence study on record, a Western university-led research team has concluded that the notion of measuring one's intelligence quotient, or IQ, by a singular standardized test is highly misleading, right? So they basically looked at it and they found that when you look, I'll just read it out verbatim, mate, won't I? The results showed that when a wide range of cognitive abilities are explored, the observed variations in performance can only be explained with at least three distinct components: short-term memory, reasoning, and a verbal component. No one component, or IQ, explained everything. Furthermore, the scientists use a brain scanning technique known as functional magnetic resonance imaging. I feel like they had to, like, you can just say fMRI.
This is someone
now
with a word count.
But this is, I mean, it feels like 2012, yeah, right? That's 10 years, people know
this
what fMRI is now.
fMRI.
That point. I don't even know what I do. You're right, maybe it is the word count. Maybe it is. They used fMRI to show that these differences in cognitive ability map onto distinct circuits in the brain. With so many respondents, the results also provided a wealth of new information about how factors such as age, gender, and the tendency to play computer games influence our brain function. Found that playing video games made you better at those things.
No
it makes
way.
Sense though. It's problem solving. Like
that's so cool.
But I want to kind of veer off and talk about something slightly different. Have you ever heard of video game literacy?
Oh, I'm guessing this is the idea that like there's a bunch of stuff that you know about how to interact with a game that other people, if not a video game person, they don't necessarily know. So like that the left joystick sometimes controls camera. Or the kind of...
Yeah, or like, you know, green being... red being something explosive, probably. Green being maybe a health thing.
Mm-hmm.
Things replenishing stamina. Like a run decreasing your stamina. And these sorts of things. Like heavy attacks being sort of slower, but doing more damage in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Shields being and the thing is, video games are so broad, right? That not every single thing is going to fit into every single video game. But generally, it's the concept of understanding how to play video games by having played a lot of video games.
Yeah, when I play video games, I often think I have this very specific thought into my head: think like a game designer. And so, like, if I see, like, for example, I see like a corner that doesn't really go anywhere, I know there's going to be some secret item in there that's going to make the game easier. That kind of thing.
Do you
right?
consciously have to think about that?
I wouldn't say it's conscious, but like I'm aware that that's a thing that's going on in my head of like, where is the video game designer wanting me to not look and is wanting to incentivize me to look if I know how they might hide those things?
Man, to me, it's like, I'm hungry. I should look in the fridge, you know? I don't even need to think, like, where would I put the food if I wanted to keep it? It's like, it's in the fridge probably, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, I when I play a video game and I'm playing through it, it's just kind of like, yeah, I get the, like, you get the vibe of a video game pretty quick. So this kind of was really thrust into my mind recently when some friends and I were playing some video games, two of whom less well-versed in video games than me and another one. And watching those two play through the same video game, I think It Takes Two, was insane.
Two.
Yeah, so right. So it was insane because they were like, things that they would struggle and take a while on because they were trying to figure out, like, I don't get how this works, blah, blah, blah. I mean, and I've never played that game, man. Never. I picked it up and I was like, yeah, I get what they want me to do. Because games use the same language in the same sense that films use, you know, a sort of shared language, right? Like, you know what sort of different... I mean, come on, give me some film things.
Well, like Chekhov's gun.
Sure. Right?
So you know if there's an item, an item in the start, you know it's probably going to come back towards the end in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Or like, you know, what certain sort of cuts mean, right? Like if you cut from one thing to another, you know that there's a through line there, right? Yeah,
the Kuleshov effect.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of the Kuleshov. No, it's not really the Kuleshov effect. But,
well, the Kuleshov effect, is that not more if you show you can modulate how people understand something by showing like different emotions around it, right? So you cut between a neutral thing and a smiling face, it gives a different impression than cutting between a neutral thing and a scared face.
Opposite. You cut to the same face and then the thing that we're looking at and we infer emotion. So if you filmed my face looking like just blank,
and then
cut to some tasty food, you're gonna be, you ask people what they think, they're gonna be like, oh, he's hungry.
Yeah.
But I was like, you just told me to have a neutral face. It's about our projecting our emotions or projecting sort of intent or thought onto people based on how things are cut together.
I guess it is kind of related, understanding that sort of shared language between different sort of mediums, right? And I guess video games, it does make sense that, you know, people who, not necessarily that video games would necessarily make you better at problem solving, but that if you are good at problem solving and you want to exercise that, you might play video games, right? It could go either way. I just want to be clear that, you know, you've got to be cautious when it comes to looking at sort of causation, right? Versus correlation, or, you know, which direction causation could be in, right? So, you know, you find out from this 2012 study that it seems that people who play video games are better at these sort of cognitive tasks. That doesn't necessarily mean that video games make you better at these tasks.
Yeah.
It could just be that people who, you know, are seeking stimulation in that way tend to veer towards that kind of thing.
Or
if you're better at it, you're more likely to continue sort of playing these games that test that or push you on that.
Or if you're worse at it, you don't find those games very fun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
This isn't fun. I have to think loads. Yeah. Why would I do this?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll
exactly.
go for a run.
Yeah, exactly. And if you say you've got like poor language skills, you might not enjoy reading. And so you could look at it as, reading improves your language skills. But it could also be that people with poor language skills don't tend to read all that often. And I'm not saying that reading doesn't improve your language skills. I literally have no knowledge on that in my head right this moment that I could call on and be like definitively yes or no. But it's just a sort of hypothetical thing there. So between those two studies, there's plenty more, obviously. I just find these ones interesting. The sort of motivation aspect, it's if you're motivated, that can improve your IQ scores. But both of these tests, both of these studies, rather, kind of concluded that IQ tests measure more than just one kind of thing. Obviously we've spoken about different aspects of sort of intelligence that IQ tests measure. But I did say earlier that, doing well on one means you're probably going to do well on another. But different studies have found that, when you really break it down, IQ as a single concept doesn't necessarily work as well as you might want it to. Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings us on to the idea of multiple intelligences, which we can do an entire episode on. Our patrons, mm-hmm. honestly, if you go to our Patreon, they are suggesting that for, the Patreon vote almost monthly. There is someone who has very consistently been doing it, and I really hope they win at some point soon because they've been very, very dedicated on it. But do you know any other kinds of intelligence beyond the kind of IQ intelligence we're talking about?
Okay, let's try and list a few. So emotional intelligence,
social intelligence, interpersonal intelligence,
social intelligence.
How would that be different from I suppose social intelligence is, I kind of would kind of wrap them in similarly, but
gosh, what other intelligences are there?
So we've spatial intelligence, musical intelligence, linguistic, logical and mathematical skills, all these different things, right? And again, we can do an entire episode on multiple intelligences. I'm not going to sit here and say this idea is 100% the best way of looking at everything. I'm just kind of getting across the idea that there are different ways of viewing intelligence, right? Like, you could be really, really good at this specific kind of problem solving, terrible interpersonal skills, terrible understanding your own emotions, terrible with spatial sort of reasoning and spatial stuff, right? So it's terrible with words as well. Like, the number of bloody scientists, physicists, and all of that stuff, all of those lot, they are just terrible at explaining themselves. I swear to God, Luke, they keep us in a job. They really do. I don't want them to get better at being able to explain stuff, because that's what we're here for.
Yeah, because it's always very interesting as well, where, I've always found it very easy to turn my thoughts into words. And to sort of use analogies and things like that. But it's always fascinating when I meet someone who I know is really smart, but there's just some block, whether it's anxiety or whether it's just like a connection or whether there's like a linguistic sort of like a vocabulary issue, and they can't turn things that they know into words, right? And I had a really interesting experience where I went to a quantum computer lab with my friend who works there. And he's a quantum computer scientist. He's really smart.
I went to a quantum computer lab with my friend. It was really fun.
Yeah. Anyway,
that sounds brilliant, but it's such a Luke Fritz, like a Luke thing to say. Okay. Carry on, man.
I don't know what that means, but that's fine. And we were there with another friend, and this guy's really super smart. He's like just so good at math, so good at physics, all this kind of stuff. But he wasn't really able to explain stuff. And then we were there with another friend. So it was basically this fun little chain where he was explaining something to me and I was like clarifying and checking a few things. And then I would explain it to our other friend. And it was like a fun little, like, we were doing a little construction line. It was very good fun.
That is madness. But yeah, no, right? Like, I think it would be quite scared if I wasn't able to convey my thoughts in a way that felt accurate to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's a very important skill to me, a very important kind of thing. But yeah, all of these different kinds of intelligence are all valid, right? Like, I mean, being really smart in a sort of classical sense, is it really that important in a lot of different things? Not really. I mean, in a field, if you're just doing sort of manual labor, probably not all that important. Yeah, you might be able to figure out a better way of doing things. Sure, you could, but you might actually be bad at doing those things in themselves. You might also miss lots of sort of very important information that you don't value or that you're not as good at working with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many cases of, I'm going to optimize this. And then you don't really realize how people, economists, I'm talking about economists, I guess, saying, I have a model. Wait, I don't understand people. People don't fit to my model. Whoops. You know what I mean?
And also, you can be incredibly, if you think about in like a sort of tribal setting, you can be really smart. You can be, but if you're like a dick, they'll kick you out of the tribe. They don't care. They don't need you. They will kick you out.
The best thing for this, I think, the best way to describe this is The Traitors, right? Have you seen any of The Traitors?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the way that The Traitors works, it's this show in the UK and I guess across the world as well. I don't even know who came up with it first, but essentially, it's a game of sort of werewolves or one of those sorts of games, right? You've got a few people who are the traitors. Their job is to secretly kill the rest of the group at night, and the rest of the group has to figure out which amongst them are the traitors. And it's very fun, very engaging. Essentially, as I said, werewolves, if you've played that before.
But Mafia as well.
Mafia as well, yeah. Now, when you watch this, there are people who are so good at the game in terms of they are making the right calls. They're thinking like, okay, this behavior, that behavior, you know, and the thing about it is that it's not just about sort of raw intelligence, problem solving, figuring things out, you know, investigating and coming up with, you got to have some level of emotional intelligence to understand how people might act. And there are people that are very, very good at both of those things and come up with the right theories and whatnot, but are so, so bad interpersonally that they get put out. Because ultimately, when it comes down to it, the way that people view, like, the way that a lot of people decide whether or not someone is a traitor or whether or not they're going to vote someone out for being, you know, a suspected traitor is whether the person's behavior feels right.
Are the vibes off?
Literally are the vibes off. Yeah. I've seen people accuse others of saying, you changed. You've changed since the start. Yes, I've changed since the start because we're now
playing the traitors.
We're playing the traitors.
I'm on TV.
We're on TV, like all the time, in a very stressful situation where we could win lots of money or we could any day be put out and lose all of that money. So yes, I've changed, you know, and I've seen people get the right answer for all the wrong reasons, you know, like, choose this person and be like, I'm certain it's this person for X, Y, Z. And I'm like, you are so wrong. You've done the working wrong. And somehow you stumbled on the right answer, you know? But it's a really interesting way of highlighting these different kinds of intelligence. There's people who are able to figure out these sorts of plans. There are people who are able to sort of pick up on different changes in people and, you know, sort of figure out what might be causing that to kind of, you know, really, really problem solve in a bunch of different ways whilst also managing the emotions of everyone else around them. Like, it takes a lot to do that. And I mean, I've been saying to a lot of people, like, I'd love to be on the traitors. I'm not likable enough. I'd be put out so quick. So
you
quick.
You should go on, though.
Oh, Luke, I would love to. Do you think a producer would choose me to go on that show?
Apply.
No, I'll tell you why I wouldn't get on that show. Because I think I would approach it far too logically and really try to game the, like, you know, James Harkin, right? From No Such Thing as a Fish. He apparently, I think on the radio or on a podcast a few weeks ago said, well, if I was looking for a traitor, I'd just look at who the producers would cast as a traitor. And that's such a James Harkin thing to say, but it's so... Yes! And that's intelligent.
But the really funny thing about the traitors as well is that when someone's being smart, sometimes they think that's suspicious. Because so much of it is like, this person's not like me.
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
You're it's not in, like yeah. me, and so I don't trust you. Mm-hmm. And then they're just like, get away, scary.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen volatile people who accuse others a lot be like, I trust this person because I feel similar to them emotionally. They literally said that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, this person's a traitor, so, you know, you're wrong, but also, you're the worst person, you know, to be not a traitor. They're called faithfuls, right? Because you're actively helping the traitors with your behavior. You know, and it's interesting, right? You know, that sort of lateral thinking that, you know, of James Harkin, you know, to be like, I would just look to see who would be cast as a traitor. It's a very, like, who would be the most interesting choice, right? It's a very, very good way of doing it. Now, obviously, they don't have anyone on the show unless they say, yep, we want to be, I would be a traitor, right? Like, that's almost a prerequisite, right? You know, to actually be cast for the show. But to look around and be like, who would be interesting as a choice here? And it's that kind of lateral thinking that, is, it is, I think, a good measure for that specific kind of intelligence, right? But then if you look at, say, Tom Scott's Lateral, that show, the podcast that we've been on a couple times, love it, great, nothing but nice things to say. That's really difficult and very fun. And it kind of shows a lot of different kinds of intelligence, right? Like you use information that you're given, information that you might already have, and you've got to figure out like a really sort of oddball problem with lateral thinking. Wow, that's almost so it's the name.
You know. Basically just pitched the show, Corey.
But what I'm saying is that I think it kind of shows how broad intelligence can be, because you can be really, really good at problem solving, but that ability to think laterally is kind of a slightly different thing in my mind, right? You know, and I think it's really interesting at highlighting the different ways that intelligence can present itself and the different kind of intelligences that there might be, and the value of different kinds of intelligence, right? Emotional intelligence is very important. It's, you know, being able to understand other people's emotions, being able to understand your own emotions, all of these sorts of things. And I think the main issue, right, with IQ is not that it's not the best measure of, you know, it's not a super accurate measure in that it can be modified by practice or motivation. And it's not that, you know, it can vary based on socioeconomic status. It's none of those things. It's kind of how we use it. I think IQ can be useful, right? Because, you know, if you're good at that sort of problem solving, if you're your classic sort of smart person, right, you probably have a high IQ. And that clearly shows that IQ is measuring something relatively well. It's how we then interpret those results that's important, and how we use IQ. If we look at it as the sole determining factor of how much value to place on a person, bad way of doing it. If we look at it as the only valid measure of intelligence, bad thing. If we look at it as being an absolute number that determines your sort of worth, as in that number is sort of, it can't change, it can't be modified, it's not the best way of doing it. But if we look at it as just one of many ways of gauging someone's ability in a particular area, maybe relatively useful for some things, right?
It's almost like we need, there's something underneath that. So if we call it IQ, we call that in like that type of intelligence, IQ intelligence. And then you've also got emotional, social, etc. intelligence, right? There's something underneath that, because I think, like you said, Corey, we often will look down on other types of intelligence. But actually, if you think it through, like emotional intelligence or social intelligence, right? In order to navigate a social setting, there's an awful lot, like if you use the word processing power in the most like broad, and our brains are not a processor, but in the broadest sense, right? What you're doing when you are emotionally intelligent and socially intelligent is you're sort of simulating the minds of other people inside your own mind. And if you were to think about that in terms of processing power, you're running a simulation of other people in your head whilst also being you and continuing to do all the things you're doing. That's an awful lot of processing power, right? If we were to do that, that's an awful lot of processing power. And if you're doing that with how does this person and this person and this person and this person interact, that's, there's so many layers there that actually what we need to learn to measure, if we're going to do this, is what is the underlying thing, that sort of brain equivalent of processing power, which can be applied either to maths and spatial transformations or other brain simulations or understanding the space that you are in. Like if you're a tennis player or if you're a football player, you have incredible spatial intelligence because you can place a ball and you understand how hard to kick something and where to put spin on it and all that kind of stuff, which you're simulating subconsciously in your mind. So there's an underlying thing, idea, like theoretically at least, there's an underlying thing which is in different people is being applied for different tasks, like processing power. And that manifests on the surface level so differently between people, but actually that underlying ability to simulate stuff, whether it's space, people, transformation of shapes, that's uniform across all different types of people. That underlying resource that the brain has is just being applied differently. Does that make sense?
No, it does. Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. And there's kind of two things I want to say. One, I want to briefly touch on your point about tennis and the kind of intelligence that for that there. Have you seen that video? I think it's Roger Federer. Is that how you pronounce his name? Roger Federer?
Roger Federer, yeah.
Being around English people, I can never tell if something ends in an A or an R. It is
Federer.
Is it Federer or Federer?
Federer.
Infuriating, right? So, but have you seen that video? I think it's of him where he said, no, that ball bounced twice.
Oh, this is brilliant.
And the way he he literally explains how he knows it bounced twice because of the way that it's, he's like, it's impossible for this to spin in this particular way or to react in this way if it did not bounce for a second time, like in a very almost imperceptible way. And when you watch it on the replay, like, the man's right.
It's brilliant.
Like he called out is it a ref in
umpire
there we go. He called out the umpire and he's like, nah mate, you made the wrong call. I know because I understand tennis to such a degree that I know from the movement of that ball how it, and I can explain it to you, right? That's an incredible kind of intelligence there, right? That, you know, you don't need as a sports person inherently, right? Like, run fast, throw thing, hit, right? Like, you wouldn't think you need a kind of intelligence for that there, but it does show this specific intelligence when it comes to tennis, right? Which I find really, really interesting. And the next thing that I kind of want to touch on, really, to be honest, the last thing I probably got to say on this is that I don't understand intelligence. I really don't. I don't understand the concept of it. And, you know, I'm well aware of how I've sounded throughout this episode of being like, I found school easy. And making jokes about having 8 points on you, right? Like, I want to be clear, though, that I'm making those jokes because, one, I don't get the concept of intelligence. Like, I have gone through my life where people have said, you're really smart. And I'm like, thank you. I don't know. Like, I'm at the point where I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know how that differentiates me from other people. Like, you can understand what being faster or stronger than someone else is, but the concept of being more intelligent than someone is one that eludes me. I simply can't comprehend it, because generally the differences I see between myself and others that people would, you know, the things people would attribute to intelligence, I would view as ignorance or, you know, curiosity, right? Those are the traits that I think are more important. In general, you know, if someone is spouting bigoted stuff or ignoring sort of basic facts, things like that, right? That's ignorance to me. That's not stupidity. That's not a lack of intelligence. That's a lack of knowledge or a rejection of knowledge. To say that that person is cognitively less capable inherently is a weird concept to me, and I genuinely struggle to understand it. You know what I mean? And again, I don't want to come off as someone being like, oh, I'm so smart. And actually, I'm baffled by the concept of intelligence. I don't understand what it means. Do you know what I mean?
It's like one of these concepts where we can't necessarily put it into words, or there's not one way of unifying it. But you know when someone is better at something than you are that requires a brain. And like, we'll all have things where, like, someone's better at this social thing than me, someone's better at maths than me, someone's better at physics than me, someone's better at throwing balls and catching them than me. And so it's sort of, I guess intelligence is such a wide
concept,
nebulous concept that kind of just covers everything our brains do that require projecting into the future or understanding each other or understanding why something happened, that it sort of covers everything that's not being done by our bodies.
Yeah. So there you go. I guess that's intelligence. It's a nebulous concept. It's not necessarily best measured solely by IQ. IQ as a concept is quite flawed. It can be influenced by practice, by motivation, socioeconomic status has an influence on someone's IQ as well. And using it for eugenics is bad. So using anything for eugenics is bad. But that's IQ. I think that's it for us, Luke. There's just one thing left to do. It's a quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. IQ edition.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between you and the audience, Luke. The first person to answer the question after asking it wins. What do they win, Luke?
One extra IQ point.
Yeah, buddy. You really need it. Maybe an extra 8 would do you some good. So we could finally be a podcast of equals. So, Luke, I'll give you an easy one, a softball here for you. What does IQ stand for?
No, don't do it. You got to have a better question
than
that.
What does IQ stand
for? Use your 150 billion IQs to think of a better question.
Look, I can only... I don't know how to make questions that you are capable of answering. My high IQ makes it so difficult to interact with people of your intelligence. Now tell me, what does IQ stand for?
Insequency.
Ding, ding, ding. I'll give you some sympathy points there.
Can I have 8, please?
You have 7.
Oh, no! I'm still inferior.
Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producer Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Go away.
125.